Welcome to episode 2 of Taking the Charge. As usual, my name is David Hein of HeinNews.com, and with me on board is...
Oz Davis of BallinEurope.com. Yo no podkivano, as we say in Budapest, Hungary.
Yes. And how's the weather there?
This is a gloriously sunny day. It is the first day in a couple of weeks that I haven't had to wear a sweater. But it's all a fluke. It's a fluke. It's not going to last.
No, we've got fall and winter coming in, man.
Yes.
So
yes.
Basketball is coming in.
Basketball is coming in. Exactly. Let's not look at it as winter coming in. Let's look at it as EuroLeague, NBA, stuff like this starts.
And nobody, because nobody really wants to hear about the weather on this podcast anyhow, right?
Well, it's a good small talk intro, right? We'll work on it, folks. We'll work on it.
Yeah, we're getting there. We got a great show. We have a fabulous interview that Oz and I did together with the director and player of the movie The Iran Job, about a basketball, American basketball, actually he's from U.S. Virgin Islands, but the movie's about his adventures in Iran, playing in the professional basketball league there, the Super League.
Certainly the best basketball documentary that was not done by ESPN 30 for 30 in the past 5-6 years. Truly a great documentary that is more than just a basketball story as the PR might have it, but is completely true in this case. It's a real human story. It's a fascinating look at Iran and Iranian culture, to which most Americans and probably most Europeans are completely unaware. Just a fantastic movie. Two thumbs up, as they would say in the States.
Definitely two thumbs up. We'll talk a little bit more at length after we get you the interview, so you can hear about... Hear what Till Schroeder and Kevin Schroeder Kevin Shepherd, sorry about that, have to say. There's that, and then there's so much stuff going on. There's a lot of preseason basketball out there right now that we're trying to put our head around, if you will, and we'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll talk about a couple other issues. The one thing that I would actually like to address is something that just came up actually within the last about 36 hours or so, and it was it's actually a soccer football story that crosses over into basketball, and which is the reason why we're talking about it is there's a coach in Nuremberg for the Nuremberg club there, and He was kind of mad and at some things going on with his team and stuff like that, and he kind of said, that we're playing a men's sport, we're not playing basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gone over, let's say, not exactly the most positive here in Germany. The German Basketball Federation actually took up on it and posted a response on its Facebook page, and as of this recording, there's been about 1,450 likes on it, and about 165 comments on it. And just give
but,
you a rundown.
But more importantly, has there been a comment or a like from the alleged women, people like LeBron James, 6'9", 240, 260 pounds, what is he? Has anybody talked to this guy about it?
it's it's and the thing is that this hacking the coach is actually a trained sports educator, which makes the whole thing a little bit stranger. The people I've talked to have been really surprised that someone with that standing would make a comment like that.
Look, I just want to say six words. I think six words sum up this situation completely well. And I'd like to sum it up like this so as not to give too much play to a bunch of really, like, at best silly, at worst barbaric comments about, you know, this is far wider ranging than sports, this insinuation. Six words for you. Here they are. Two wins, nine losses, one draw. That's his soccer team's mark right now. They are in last place in the Bundesliga, okay? These remarks were said out of frustration. Here is, as I said on Ball in Europe today, here is a guy who needs positive press more than anybody except for maybe Mitt Romney. And he goes and he panics. Well, he makes this insane hyper-macho remark, which is just going to plunge him further. I'd be surprised if this guy is still coaching the team by the end of his Bundesliga season.
I do a little bit of football on the side, and he's been in trouble in the past, because in case anybody comes back, they're actually doing quite well this season so far. They have 7 points through four games. Two wins, a draw, and a loss, and they're actually in the upper half of the table right now. But they've had issues in the past, DBB, the Germans, they said it's sad and it shows a great ignorance that a trained sports educator would make such an unqualified and untrue statement.
Yes,
and they went out and then they said, you know, let's you know, maybe it's not all lost for Mr. Hecking. You know, and they gave him the offer of inviting him to a Bundesliga or EuroLeague game in Bamberg. Nuremberg it's about maybe 45 minutes from Bamberg, so he doesn't have to go too far, is what they said. And they said, you know, if nothing else, even just come for a joint practice session. And then actually, took it a step further and said, you know, but that might be difficult since footballers only practice three times a week for 60 minutes. Okay, they took it overboard.
Think so?
Yeah, a little bit. But
see, I thought that was an okay answer.
No, it's okay. I mean, it's an okay. I mean, it was a serious jab at German basketball and actually basketball in general. You can't just say German basketball. In basketball in general, and talking to a couple of people that they're really, really disappointed that there's been such a push like this, and it was on the private the pay TV station that shows the football, and you know, there's a lot of people up in arms in the basketball community about this, and as of now, there hasn't been a response from the club, the Nuremberg club. I don't know if they're actually going to come back and address it. It would be kind of interesting to see how what does happen.
Especially since this came off as just a throwaway remark. I mean, it's not like he was doing an interview about soccer versus basketball support or anything like that. This just came from out of nowhere. And, you know, now it's going to be ballooned into this, you know, pissing off a sizable portion of the sports community, especially in Germany where the sport is coming up. It's getting really popular. I mean, like the National Federation said, he's got a EuroLeague class team right next door, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, in Germany, you really don't want to be saying this. And again, too, it's just, you know, the shocking Neanderthal mentality. I mean, what is a women's sport? Don't more women actually play soccer than basketball worldwide? I would bet that's the case. I mean, what does that mean, women's sport, that it's worse or inferior? I mean, come on. It's just such an inane remark on so many levels. You know?
Yeah, and it, like, you know, like we were saying, it's just such a, it's disappointing after the advances that basketball here in Germany have, not just Germany, that's the thing, you know, it's something that, you know, that it just shows that there's still, you know, in the football world, a lack of respect of the game, and so.
Well, I mean, you know, as an American, you can see it in most countries in Europe, and by most, I mean basically everywhere except for Lithuania. You know, basketball has taken a back seat to soccer. It's second place at best, even in crazy countries like Russia and Serbia. You know, it's always got that second place standing. And, you know, again, this is an example of a guy that's, like, you know, self-aggrandizing at somebody else's imagined expense. I think his comments are ridiculous. I wonder if there's going to be any backlash against FC Nuremberg for this.
I can't wait to see if it does happen, because I think you really have to. I think you really have to tip your hat to the German Basketball Federation that they actually took this and said, you know, hey, we're not going to accept something like this, you know, and really came out and, you know, and added a little jab to them as well, and, you know.
Oh yeah, at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been nice if they actually had thrown in there, like, you know, if we could even talk to the Bamberg coach, and maybe he can get tips from the players on how to dive, you know, to get calls and stuff like that, you know.
I like this challenge.
I doubt that something will come of it, because the football side will just say it's not that big of a deal. You know, I don't know if the club will actually go in. You know, you're at like 1,500 people. You're at like maybe, you know, yeah. Okay, so you have to have. It's such a specialized. Community right now. You know, until somebody gets it and puts it out there, you know, I don't think it's going to be an issue.
That's the thing. It was a throwaway remark, and that's why I think that the German Federation, you know, had exactly the correct response. You know, you don't want. I mean, imagine somebody in the States getting this story and running with it the wrong way and just spinning it constantly and out of control and, like, you know, releasing statements against this guy and demanding his resignation or an apology or something. I mean, they're not going to do that. However, they are going to point out that this is, like, you know, dumb. Hopefully this story goes viral. I mean, if the American media picks it up and all of a sudden these articles that are, like, talking about him and whatever are getting, like, thousands and tens and hundreds of thousands of reads, then he's going to be embarrassed. But the German Federation is not going to be the one doing it. No way. It's going to be the blogosphere running with it. And that's how it should be.
And that's how it should be. And the podcast world.
For example.
We're coming again. We're coming at more people. Right? Right? Right, Oz?
Yeah, we're just muckrakers.
Come on. Okay. A very unfortunate issue. And, you know, definitely stay tuned. We will definitely keep track on it and let you know what's going on. And if things happen, you'll definitely be able to hear it on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about actually things going on the court. There are two very, very, very good basketball mini tournaments this weekend in Germany. And first off, apologies to people who say, you know, all they do is talk about Germany. This is not talking about Germany. It just happens to be taking place in Germany. There was the Beko Leagues Cup, which had Bayern Munich, as well as CSKA Moscow, Sargiris Kaunas, and Besiktas.
Now I can't think of four more interesting teams to look at this time of the year, except for maybe Olympiacos, but they played in the other tournament. Wow, good storylines here. Of course, you know, the Lithuanian teams are always a strange case. They usually have their roster set the earliest, and yet you still have no idea how they're going to look come the season time. However, they're already primed. They're already playing like a team, getting the rhythm, these other things that teams have to adjust to. Czechia Moscow, of course, worth a look. Worth a look. I consider them the favorites to win it all this year, despite losing the AK-47. They're still returning most of their key players, including the... Sorry?
And Alexei Shved.
Oh, yeah. Shved, yeah, that's true. Shved is also gone. But I do like the returning players. I do like Nanad coming back. I mean, you forget he had the second highest performance index rating through the season, cumulative last year. Good part of that team. Bayern Munich, of course, which I won't spend too much time talking about, but as everybody knows, it's a great story. And, of course, Besiktas in unquestionably the most important year for this franchise. Basically raided the TBL stocks to get guys like Gaspar Vidmar, Sever Ozer, and Murat Can Güler, while losing Pops, Carlos Arroyo, Hawkins and Kemp, Dudley. So here is a team that shuffled the deck a bit. Four interesting stories.
Yeah, and you know the games were, you know, some of them were better than others. CSKA Moscow won the thing kind of going away, which is actually kind of scary considering that you know, a couple of the big guns were only in training like 4 or 5 days.
That team's a monster.
Yeah, it's gonna and it's just starting to create its monsterness. And they beat Besiktas. They beat Besiktas in the final. It was just a 2-day event, so you had Bayern Munich losing to CSKA Moscow in the first day, and then Besiktas beating Žalgiris, and then Žalgiris ended up beating Bayern
for third place
exactly.
Do you suppose that the Lithuanian media is already proclaiming the end of the season for them? There are a few doom and gloomers in the Lithuanian press corps.
The coach needs to be
sacked. Yep. Has Vladimir heard about this yet, or is he too busy watching soccer?
I don't know, but that's going to be a very, very interesting team. The Sheik this year. I mean, you were talking about how much they went out and got, and you know, there's going to be you know, I mean, some of the guys are coming in from programs that aren't the biggest. So it'd be interesting to see how they perform. I mean, you have a lot of
I like how the accent is on the Turkish players now. Now the Turkish players are the superstars, and I like that. I think that, and I say this all the time on Ball in Europe. I think that Turkey has one of the most vibrant, like, youth programs and development schemes right now for producing athletes. I honestly believe in the Turkish invasion of the NBA. I have that slated for about 3-4 seasons from now. I think that they're producing big guys by the ton, big guys who can play. And so it's nice to see Besiktas go Turkish as the accent, rather than, you know, the Pops and Carlos Arroyo team. As much as I love Pops and Carlos, I think it's good in the bigger picture that they went with guys like Ozer.
And it's funny because you say that the Turks go in Turkish, and actually Žalgiris is actually, despite actually going and getting a Spanish coach, which is going to be kind of interesting to see. Getting their Lithuanians back. Rimantas Kalkinas came back from Montepaschi. The Marinovich brothers came back from Montepaschi and CSKA Moscow. You know, those are three big names in Lithuanian basketball. And you know, they're all getting up there in age, and so, you know, they're coming back and playing in front of the home nation and the proud nation, and so it'll be interesting to see how this team gels, and I just think it's a fascinating dynamic with Juan Plaza there as coach there, you know.
Well, I think he's the draw for the pro players. Look, this looks like a Celtics situation. You know, we like the coach. A bunch of veterans come on for one, two more years. Let's make a run. And who knows? They could. I mean, the Lithuanian players tend to have the highest basketball IQ out there, I think, on average. If these guys could win on brains alone, you know. Okay, so they're not going to be fast breaking all the time, you know. But here's a bunch of guys who occasionally have played together on the very random national team. They want to play for this top drawer coach. He's the draw. You know, I think in the same way, Cesca managed to stay together with the promise of Messina coming on. You know, he was a nice draw for that team as well. I mean, jeez, you talk about what was probably on paper and even like cumulative in Europe, maybe the best team in EuroLeague. And now that they're bringing back Messina.
It's pretty scary.
Wow. But I like Plaza and Žalgiris. I like Plaza there. I think that team's going to surprise. I think, like I say, on intelligence and willpower alone, they're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah. And so we also there was another tournament going on in Germany, and it was the Dome Rider Cup in Nuremberg. And in that one, there was the reigning EuroLeague champions Olympiakos going up against Rosa Baskets Bamberg, the German three-peat champions, as well as Maccabi Tel Aviv and Khimki Moscow. Olympiakos ended up winning.
Mm-hmm.
They beat Bamberg and. Beat Bamberg and beat Khimki before actually losing to Tel Aviv. But Tel Aviv actually finished last with their, that was their one victory they lost to the other two, and finishing second was Khimki. Talking to some of the people who were there, unfortunately I wasn't able to make it, but we'll come back to that in a second. It seemed like Olympiakos is raring to go and should be looking at maybe another run, at least to challenge for the title.
What a pleasant surprise! I was really pleased to see that. I chalk this up somewhat to the fact that they played on national team this summer. A lot of these guys they had. What, maybe four or five guys on the national team? I like that. And one of the underrated subplots, I think, of this EuroLeague season is going to be Olympiakos Panathinaikos. Okay? As we know for the last, what, 9, 10, 11 years, for the previous 9, 10, 11 years, Panathinaikos was Greek champ. Panathinaikos had played in three championships, I believe, and won all three. They have five EuroLeague titles versus Olympiakos, who has a much less storied history. Traditionally, what has happened is the Olympiakos ownership shuffles the deck every year, goes out, signs the big free agents, totally reworks the lineup. But this year, it's the reverse. Panathinaikos is the one out shopping, completely changing their lineup, you know, losing some of their older three-ringed guys, and bringing in a whole new team. I am glad for Olympiakos' success. I mean, obviously that was the story of the year last year, them winning the EuroLeague championship and then the Greek League championship, which had eluded them since what, the 90s. Great to see that success. I'm not really surprised about Maccabi. Here's another team that did the complete workover this season. So it's going to take some time for them to come together. Traditionally, this seems to be the case. with Maccabi. I believe last year they started very slow in EuroLeague. Didn't look so impressive at the beginning of the year. Takes some time for these guys to come together. They'll come together.
I mean, it's David Blatt, so I mean, he'll figure out.
Yeah. As far as the other teams, well, I've been promoting Khimki as one of the future powerhouses of the EuroLeague. I understand they went into the season with a pretty fair operating budget. Some estimates had them at about 21 million euros, which is a fair chunk of change. For Khimki, I was looking at, their additions, mostly. Kelvin Rivers, 2009 graduate out of Clemson. He just signed this offseason. He had a couple of 14-point games. It's good to see. A couple of 14.2 steal games, actually. I love Pietari Koponen, so I was happy to see him play some ball. He had a couple of 9-point multiple assist games. However, he didn't play in one game. Do you know anything about that, Dave?
I do not. Like I said, I wasn't
in one
there.
Game took,
I wasn't
in one
there,
game he took a DNP.
So
I didn't. I watched very little of this tournament. So he took a DNP in one game. I'm not sure why. Again, I guess, you have to say that here are another four interesting teams. EuroLeague is really a fascinating story for those who don't follow it. It's really a fascinating story. We're still, 3 weeks away from tip-off, are we not?
At least that, yeah.
Yeah, and there are already these subplots developing.
And there'll be names coming in to, players still being signed. Once NBA camps start kind of dwindling down, they'll probably have to, there'll be some people, maybe looking at get one of those guys as well that don't make the team, mm-hmm.
How do you assess Bamberg's chances? We didn't talk about them. What do you think about Bamberg this season?
It's a very, very different team. I mean, mm-hmm. you lost really four of their, top players. B.J. Tucker and Brian Roberts go to the NBA. Marcus Slaughter leave to Real Madrid, and Tibor Pleiss went down to Spain as well, going to Caja Laboral. So,
few of these departures were unexpected, however. I mean, I read one thing that had Slaughter declaring he was going to go to Madrid in, February.
Yeah, I mean, none of them are really surprises. I mean, but on the other hand, and we can talk more about them in future shows and stuff like that. But, the big name that they brought in was Bastian Nachbar, the Slovenian, mm-hmm. former Slovenian mm-hmm. international. And they really need him to be a scorer and really do some big things for them. They get back John Goldsberry, who's kind of like their heart and soul as far as the point guard goes. And he'll be teaming him and Anton Gavel, the German BBL Defensive Player of the Year, teaming those two in the pack field. That's going to be some pretty good defense, and you got to they brought in Sherrod Ford, who last year was going to be with Bayern Munich and left under sort of stranger circumstances, not clear exactly what happened, and they brought him. He knows the league a little bit since he played with Alba Berlin, and he had a double-double in the last game of this tournament here on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought in Teddy Gibson, a lefty, mm-hmm. 2-1 guard, who will help.
And they have this. And they have this roster set fairly early in the going. So I think this will be a solid team early.
One thing that AJ Ogilvy, who came from Spain. Australian international, went to college in the States.
Yes, the Team Australia player.
He's been dealing with some injury issues, and up until last week had only practiced twice. And he suffered a little bit of a groin injury, and
well,
and
well so wishes for AJ, that's for sure.
Yeah, they're going to need to. I think they really kind of need to let him rest, and I mean, he may have been trying to go too much in those games. So because he's going to be a big part, they're going to need him down low to play a big role. So it's going to be an interesting run. I mean, they're going to face a lot bigger of a challenge this year in the domestic league than they did last year. Where there was an occasion here or there where they were kind of, you know, challenged, but, you know, a lot of teams have really stocked up in Germany, and it's going to be a tough run for them, even in the league. There was a lot of times in the league last year where they could go all out in the EuroLeague, but, and then could kind of, you know, not necessarily say coast, but take it a little easier.
Take your foot off the pedal.
In the league, mm-hmm. there are still some bad teams in the league, but in general, mm-hmm. the league is getting a lot better from top to bottom, and mm-hmm. they're still gonna face some tough competition, especially in those weaker teams, in those road games against those weaker teams. So it's still a work in progress.
I was just taking a look at the EuroLeague groupings, and Bamberg is paired up with FC Barcelona and CSKA Moscow this season.
That's gonna be fun. Well, plus
not to mention Partizan and Besiktas.
Exactly. So. And Leitos Ritos Vilnius. I mean, yep. you know, there. Yeah, think about it. You have Besiktas as the sixth team in the group. I mean, that is a tough one, you know, so we'll see. I mean, they you know, they're getting there, you know, and this definitely helped them. You know, they played, you know, they played against three of the top teams in all of Europe, uh-huh. and so it's definitely going to be good. And then next weekend, this coming weekend on the 30th of September, they play against Ratio Farm Ulm, who was the runner-up last year. Okay. In the Champions Cup, so that'll be a final test before the Bundesliga, the BBL starts on October 3rd. So,
all right, domestic basketball in Europe is beginning.
Yes, definitely. I think we'd be ready to turn the page. I think we should set up our little chat. Okay. You want to tell them about it a little bit?
This interview with the producer / director and subject / star, if you will, of the motion picture, The Iran Job, documentary shot during the 2008-09 season. It is an interesting pastiche of a first division club in Iran. Nice basketball footage, rare stuff that you don't see, because we see very little of the Iran League. It also has a political motif as we talk about the Obama election and what that means to African Americans. And the political election, the political events and election in Iran in 2009. Finally, it's also the story of the man himself, his Serbian roommate, and a few women and friends of their, male friends of theirs from around the neighborhood, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It is also the story of these characters. And it's an excellent film. The film will be premiering, I believe, this weekend in Los Angeles. It's also been scheduled for a date in New York. There are details on how you can bring it to your town that are revealed in the podcast, so you'll have, later in the podcast, so you'll have to keep listening. And the DVD, I believe, is available now. You can order that through the website, theiranjob.com. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I won't say too much more. I will say that these guys are very engaging and have some interesting things to say.
Yeah, it was a really fun conversation, and we won't make you wait any longer. So enjoy this. Again, this is Kevin Shepherd, the basketball player, along with Till Schroeder, the director producer of the film The Iran Job. So have fun. Okay, so on the line with us today is Kevin Shepherd and Till Schroeder. They are the protagonist and director producer of the film The Iran Job, which is a look at Kevin's experiences in playing in the Iranian First Division. So welcome to the show, Till and Kevin.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
So first of all, maybe Till, maybe you could talk a little bit about how did this project come together, and then also how did you hear about Kevin?
Well, in 2008, a friend of mine who's a fellow basketball fan and also happens to be to an Iranian like I am, sent me an article, ESPN piece actually, about a bunch of Americans, a handful of Americans, who decided to sign contracts to play in the Iranian Super League. And this was at a time when we were high at war in Iraq, of course, and it looked like Iran was going to be next, just like it does again now, coincidentally. And I felt like this would potentially be an opportunity to tell a story through sports and give us a chance to enter Iran through the eyes of an athlete, and thereby maybe give us an opportunity to understand the country and the culture a little better before we get entangled into something that we really don't want to get entangled into. You know, like another military engagement or something like that.
And how did you hear about Kevin?
Well, that was the next challenge. I had that interesting context of American players in Iran, but then I knew that I wanted to make a feature length film, and to do that, you really have to have a character that can carry a full length feature film, and that requires a special character. Much like in a feature film, actually, you kind of need a hero, somebody who has a lot of facets and layers. And the choice was limited because not so many Americans do this, and maybe the five or six players that do it, they're not necessarily eager to talk to you because they actually face some repercussions legally for playing in Iran. Not by the Iranian side, but by the U.S. State Department, which at that time argued that they were breaking the embargo by making money in Iran.
They were actually providing a service, right? Is that what their argument was, right?
Well, their argument was that you can't, under the embargo, you cannot do business with Iran. And in a sense, when you go to Iran as a professional athlete, you do business. You provide a service and you get paid for it. And that's illegal, and that struck me as very unconstructive given the fact that we don't even have diplomatic relationships with Iran, yet we have all this tension. Why would you not allow some sort of dialogue at least to unfold through athletes? That struck me as rather unconstructive.
At least a cultural exchange, which is what
exactly
it's culture,
right? And so the fact of the matter was that some of these guys just weren't interested in talking to me because they didn't want to deal with the legal hassle, so that decreased my choice even further. And the ones that did want to talk to me, they didn't have that special something that it is necessary for to carry a film. And my wife is the producer, Sarah Najumi. We were actually ready to tank the whole project because we just couldn't quite find that character until finally the scout of Az Shiraz in Iran called Sarah and told her that they just signed Kevin Shepherd. And so, and would you want to talk to him? And we said, sure. And so we arranged a Skype call with Kevin, And within literally like 20 seconds, he had us on the floor laughing. And I had a good feeling about him. So I went and met him and finally found my character. And I feel very blessed that that we found him, and happy that we took the time to, you know, really to really search for that perfect fit.
Kevin, how do you recall that that call with Till?
Well, at first I thought it was a joke or something. It was pretty strange. Someone wanted to do a movie, and at first I said, "Well, I don't know about this," but you know, I said, "Why not?" Since so many of my friends back home in the Virgin Islands would call me and make a lot of silly jokes about me riding camels to practice and eating camel soup and stuff like that. You know, this was just a way to get rid of their prejudices and their ridiculousness and their jokes. So in many ways, I wanted to show them the lifestyle, how I live over there and what I was going through, so they can stop some of these jokes that they was making about people they knew nothing about. So basically, that's why I really jumped into it.
Kevin, we talked about how Mr. Shatter found you, but here's one thing that's not covered in the film. How did the Iranian Super League find you? Why you? Were they scouting you? Did your agent contact them, or how did that work?
Well, obviously the network of international basketball is so, you know, it's so wide, and I don't know how they found me. I played a lot of international basketball everywhere in Europe. I played in Poland and played in Israel. You know, I played in a lot of places, Argentina, Venezuela. But I think they probably got a whiff of me through my national team, because I also played with the Virgin Islands national team, in which we played against the USA and the Argentina and the Brazil, and I always do pretty well. So I think that was probably in 2007 in the pre-Olympics in Las Vegas. They probably got a whiff of me, and they contacted me through my agent, and I thought about it, and I said, why not?
I got another question for you, Kevin. You just mentioned that you had played in all these different countries, and I remember a few scenes in the movie where the coach is very ardently making a point, and you have to turn to the camera and say, I don't know what the hell you just said. How do you play for a coach that doesn't speak the language?
Well, you know, luckily, you know, basketball and sports itself transcend, you know, all languages, because the language is very universal. And one of the most important thing about my position is the fact that I'm a point guard, which means I'm basically like the second coach on the floor, and the second coach in the team. So whatever he draws up on the playbook, because I have so much vast knowledge of playing, I could pretty much interpret what he really wants by watching him drawing up whatever he, you know, he puts on the board. But in terms of communication and what he's trying to say, you know, like the movie said, I don't know the hell he's talking about. Just give me the ball and get out of the way. I don't know what he's talking about.
That's what he was saying.
Let me just get the job done, and as long as he smiles, I know I did something right. So I just use my vast knowledge of my experiences.
Kevin, you talked about sort of the prejudices and the jokes that you had heard. Talk about culture shock. I mean, you had been in Israel, you had been in China, you had been in Brazil. How big of a culture shock was this? And in what regards was it that culture shock?
I mean, it was a huge culture shock for me, first of all, because, you know, I was part of those prejudices and those jokes, because I was saying the women was a bunch of ninjas walking around with hoods. And, you know, I thought that, you know, I was making jokes about terrorism and they was harboring Bin Laden and all these silly jokes. So I was part of those jokes. So I can't lie to you. I was making a lot of these statements. But once I got there and I realized and I got into the people and their lifestyle and how easily they let me in and how friendly they were and you know, how they really took in an American ball player. With all of this happening on the news, saying down with America, down with USA, it enables me to distinguish the real people with government policies. And that's a lot of thing a lot of people on this side of the world do not understand, that government make their own policies, but it doesn't really reflect the people as a whole. And I was able to witness the real Iranian people. And I saw the movements and all the green movements that happened in the revolution when they was unhappy with the election. And it was sad because the rest of the world on this side of the world and pretty much Europe itself didn't get to see these activities the way I saw it, because I was right there. So it had to change you.
And you're also kind of were you with mainly women, at least in the film? How different was that compared to the other places you've been? And maybe also how much did playing in Israel kind of affect you being there?
Well, as far as the women in the film and playing in Iran, normally when I go overseas, you know, most imports have one rule: do your job, get your paycheck, and get out of here. But you know, one of the differences in Iran, though, once I got in touch with the women, I realized that even though I had all these prejudices about these women being ninjas and stuff like that, when I uncovered the truth about the women, they were so intelligent and highly educated. And the fact that they let me into their lifestyles and what they have to go through as women over there. I mean, these women speak English, Farsi, and French. And most of the guys on my team couldn't even understand one drop of English. Yet, if one of these women saw a guy commit a crime, they could not testify against that guy in court, because one woman is not enough to make a witness. You need two women to form one witness. So it was really... Once I heard all of these things, it was really heartbreaking. And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. And it just made me appreciate it, what we had in America and what all our women over here, you know, have that opportunity to go even further. As far as my experiences playing in Israel and in Iran, I didn't really have that much problem. You know, what I realized once I got to Iran, once I got with the people itself did not even hate each other like how the media put it out to be. I mean, that is really government driven, because my coach told me one crazy story that I will never forget, that he came to America and he was roommate with an Israeli coach, and both of them had great time. They went out, they had fun, they talk about basketball, and nobody couldn't tell whether or not they were from Iran or Israel, because people was just people. But if you put those same two in context in terms of government, they probably would never speak. So it just shows the division between what the government was trying to instill on the rest of the world, saying that the Iranian people are down with USA, down with Israel, and so forth. But once you get in touch with the real people, you understood that they had their own internal problems. They have no time to be worrying about USA or Israel, because they were struggling with their own government for their freedom and their rights and their opportunities to get out of that that lower class, as you know, as I can put it.
I have a question for Mr. Shouter on this point. We know a lot about Kevin, what Kevin got out of the experience from this interview and from the movie. And I know that in a documentary situation, the direction production team is supposed to be invisible. But what did yourself and your production crew come away with interacting with maybe Iranian technical people, service people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, first of all, I should say that the production crew was basically me, myself, and I, because... Because we couldn't secure journalist visas or shooting permits. We didn't have either. And so that really made it impossible to bring a crew. Originally, we were going to go with HBO Real Sports and, you know, Brian Gumbel and, you know, bring a real crew. But they were unable to insure their people because of the embargo again. And then on top of that, I was denied the journalist visa. So... that really changed the whole. That really changed the whole trajectory of the film. And so far as I then made the decision, because I'm dual German and U.S. citizen, so I decided to enter Iran as a tourist with my German passport, and you know, packed a very small camera and you know, Kevin will tell you it wasn't a lot of equipment. It was really just one small backpack with that camera and one mic, and I think one cable, and that was it.
Wow. And, I got to say, that's hard to believe because the film looks great.
Well, thank you. That's
true. It's true.
My idea was that if people were going to ask me what I was doing, I would tell them I'm a German tourist shooting the sites or whatever. Uh-huh. So it was all under the radar in a way. What really helped me out is that the club that Kevin played for, Al Shiraz, is unlike most clubs in the Super League in Iran, is actually privately owned. Most of the other clubs are sponsored by some sort of ministry. For example, the Ministry of Defense, you know, the very ministry that's negotiating about nuclear proliferation and so forth.
Wow.
Al Shiraz happens to be privately owned, and so the owner of that club just had the power to make a decision, and he said, "I believe in this idea. Come on over, and we'll host you, and you can do, at least in our club, you can do whatever you want." And that was just amazing access. I mean, they let me participate in everything. You saw in the film that, you know, even in intimate team meetings where, you know, people were really going at each other, I was there. And they let me on the bus, they let me on the planes, they let me in the hotel rooms, and worst of all, they never let me pay for any of this. It became embarrassing.
Oh yeah, it sounds terrible.
Well, you'd be as an American, you might find it funny, but for us, it was like, you know, you don't want to take advantage of people, and of course, was fully prepared to pay my way, but they just were so hospitable, and they just didn't want to have any part of it. You know, they said, "You're our guest, and we'll take care of you." And that was just striking, the hospitality and friendliness that I encountered, and I think Kevin would agree.
Kevin, I think that, you know, probably it'd be maybe more at the beginning of your time there. But were you ever close to leaving?
Not really, honestly. You know, once I put my mind to something and I signed up for something, then I'm going to give it 100%, you know, as difficult as it was, because as you saw in the film, my team was really not that talented. It was their first year in the Super League. And by just watching that talent, my team, you would probably think there's no talent in the league, but the way how they do it in the Super League over there, they put all the best players on the top teams. Like, it's like a national team grooming league, just to groom their national team, their junior national team. So they overload their top teams with all the best players, and all the, say from the fifth team go down to 13, is like, you know, pretty much, you know, mediocre compared to those teams. So, you know, once you see my team compared to their team, you could only imagine how difficult it was for me to play against those teams without that type of talent. But once I started understanding the guys and started to figure out ways how to get them to play at their potential, then we was able to come as a team. And as long as you're playing as a team, you know, a team really can beat any amount of talent somewhat, until we meet the big dogs, as you saw at the end of the movie. And we got destroyed.
Yeah, I was struck actually at how good the defending champs looked. I mean, wow, that's a decent team. Anybody who doesn't believe Iranians can ball should watch that.
They won Asian Championship 4 years in a row, so they were.
Kevin, talk about the level of basketball. I mean, you've been there a couple more years, and we'll come back to that. But talk about the level of basketball. You know, you'd been in Europe, you'd been in Central America, South America. Talk about where you see the level of play. The national team has had quite a bit of success. So what do you think about the level of ball there?
I think the level is okay, but I think they can really get, you know, to a higher level. I think just like I explained just before, by crowding all the teams with all the best players, what it does, you do not give your best players a chance to improve, because they're night in and night out, they're pretty much playing a weaker team, so they don't have any competition to push them to the maximum height. And I think too many European teams does that. Even when you look to Israel, they got Maccabi Tel Aviv, and they won the championship like 40 or 50 years in a row, which is really ridiculous. Because, you know, you put all the best players on one team, you kind of shrink yourself for development. I think competition is really healthy for growth. And I think if the Iranian Super League really start dividing the talent, put one national team player on each of the team, giving them an opportunity to work even harder, I think their game can only get better. But as far as, like you said, their international, I don't even know how to say it, but they made a lot of strides internationally, because they've been to the previous Olympics and the World Championships, which is like the two biggest levels in our sport. So, and they have one NBA player who played with the Memphis Grizzlies, with Hamed Hamadi. Doesn't play much, but, you know, at least he's there.
He represents.
You know, he's representing, you know, the Iranian basketball.
How much does he, I mean, with your interaction with the Iranian players, how much does he, how big is he in that country, Hamadi?
He's pretty big. I played against him 1 year. He played with, you know, one of the military teams, like Till mentioned. And, He's really big. He's like a local hero. That's one thing with sports and athletes in Iran, pretty much anywhere. Once someone excels to represent that country, they get a lot of accolades and stuff like that. So he's very well represented in Iran, and they really love him there.
He's actually cult here, too. I don't know if you know that. There's a lot of Iranians in California, for example, where we are right now. And Hamed, even though he, you know, he's kind of a bench warmer, he's not a superstar, at least in the NBA. He plays maybe 2 minutes per game if he's lucky.
Yeah,
but he has a cult following here in America. Every Iranian who's halfway interested in sports knows him.
Kevin, there's a scene in the movie sort of at the end where you're talking to the ladies back in Iran on Skype, and you say, you're looking forward to coming back. What were the biggest factors in you deciding to return to Iran?
Well, you know, like I said, once I got there and I saw the people and I started interacting with the ladies, and I got really friendly and I got really emotional, really. I got my emotions got tied up with the city. I said I have to go back and play a couple more years. And actually, I went back for 2 more years, and I played there. And, you know, it was an experience of a lifetime, really. It's no other place I've been, and I've been almost everywhere that can compete with what I witnessed in Iran. And it's not written, it's not scripted, it's not anything. It just happened, and I was lucky enough to be there. And even lucky enough to get out before any major thing happened, like what we're seeing in Syria and Egypt and so forth.
So Kevin, what sort of advice would you give to a player, prospective player in Iran?
Like a journeyman going to Iran?
Yeah.
I will really tell them to be open-minded. And go over there with respect. That's one thing with myself. I'm always very humble and respectable. I'm respectable to your culture. Be respectful to their culture also. And just go open-minded, because so many of the American players, especially, because they come over there and they already have this built-in prejudices and this stigma about the people. And that's and like myself, because that's what we hear at this side of the world. They're terrorists. They're crazy. They just want to blow up the world. But once you go over there and you start seeing and living and being with the people, you have no choice but, but to fall in love with them. Like Till said, I had many experiences going out with the guys, and even though I make more money than them, I tried to pay for dinner, and they would never let me pay for dinner. And I know I make more money than them. And sometimes I even try to sneak the money to the cashier. And they would get so mad at me. They would come in at night, stick the money underneath my door and start cussing me out. Don't you ever, ever do that to me again. You know, these type of statements. Wow. Disrespected me. You are my guest. And it, you know, this type of affection and love, I don't see anywhere. And wow. I learn a lot from them, and you know, I wish I could take that back to the Virgin Islands, but it's not happening. It's not.
I'd like to know about something from both Kevin and Mr. Shouter. I'm the ball in Europe.
Call me Joe, by the way.
I'm the ball in Europe guy. So for me, one of the compelling subplots of this movie was about Zoran. What can you tell me about Zoran? He kind of came off as a quiet guy. I don't know whether that's just because he doesn't feel comfortable with his English. And I wanted to know, since Zoran plays such an important part of this film, when are you bringing it to Serbia?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, from a filmmaker standpoint, Zoran was gold because he was a perfect contrast to Kevin. You know, Kevin is
yes, and I really must say I liked how you pointed out this previous conflict between the U.S. and Serbia in this film. I think that really brought home a lot of the points, general points being made in the movie. So I was really thankful for that. This is not a story that was even covered at the time very much in American media. So it's good to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, from a storytelling standpoint, he adds a big contrast. You know, Kevin is a little bubbly guy. And the point guard and the jokester, and Zoran is the tall guy who was basically quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And just physically and also emotionally, they were such stark contrast. It was funny to me. And what you were just saying about the whole thing with Serbia, I mean, Kevin can talk on that much more. But it was just interesting to have these guys share an apartment.
That's the odd couple.
The odd couple sharing an apartment when Zoran's country was basically bombed by the U.S. not so long ago, and here they are in a country that is also supposed to be an enemy again, and they sort of have to duke it out there together. So it adds a nice sort of subplot and just puts yet another shade on this whole concept of, you know, reconciliation and trying to actually strike up a dialogue rather than confronting each other. I don't know, Kevin, what do you think about the Zoran story?
Man, Zoran is my guy. I mean, I love Zoran to death to this day. I mean, he was just basically the perfect roommate. And he always insists that the Serbian women are the best. And we argue about that a lot, you know, so...
He hasn't been to Hungary yet.
Hopefully he will invite me to Serbia. He said he was going to invite me, but
That's what I was wondering is you have to do the Belgrade premiere. This guy has a future in acting.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. I there's a film festival in Sarajevo that we may try next year, 2013. I think there may be one in Belgrade, but that would be one of my dreams, is to bring it there so that he can see it, because he's never even seen the movie.
That would be fantastic, and I'm sure it would play really well there. They have a great basketball culture.
When you talk about fundamentally sound, I mean, Zoran is so fundamentally sound. 7 feet tall, can pass, can shoot it like anyone else. He's just so intelligent. You know, he's older, so he plays a little slow, but his mind works with the best of them. And I basically couldn't take the team to the playoffs without him. He was really an instrumental key for that team. So, I mean, and not only just for basketball, in my life also, like we said, his country was bombed by America. And he actually told me the whole stories, how he was just 10 years old and he was like basically 100 feet away in a bomb shelter. And he was just hearing bombs just dropping night and day, And, you know, that only humbles me because me coming from America, I never had, you know, I don't hear no bombs. I never even hear a bomb, you know, mm-hmm. when anything like that. So I could only imagine what kind of psychological scar he must be walking with. Not only him, but, you know, also the Iranians with their war. And one of the most interesting characters also, which would be Abdullah, because he was from Afghanistan and his country was on the war. Uh-huh. And he was a refugee coming from Afghanistan to Iran. So I was uh-huh. basically surrounded by a lot of people with a lot of psychological problems, man. I was just there to help out.
Plunged into geopolitics.
I was just plunged right there. I couldn't escape. If they all would have turned on me and said, America, I hate you. what could I do? I couldn't do anything.
I'm from the Virgin Islands.
Yeah, that's it. They don't even know how to say Virgin Islands. They say Virginia. So I think I want to escape.
So you talked about the very limited camera equipment that you had. Maybe talk about how much film you actually, how much footage did you actually get, and then talk about the process of cutting that down to, I think we're about an hour and a half.
We had about a little under 200 hours of footage, and to cut that down to hour and a half is a very, 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 very long process. We had luckily some very good interns, because you know, the funding of this film was a challenge from the get-go. We did it totally without a network involved, and so the money was always tight, and we were relying on dedicated people. And luckily, somehow this project has from the get-go always attracted people that were willing to really invest time into it. And so the first year was all about interns figuring out what the hell this pile of footage is and sort of organizing it and putting it in some sort of state where I could even start editing. And then I cut the first year. I spent that first year just sort of getting a rough cut together. And with that rough cut, we were able to attract our fantastic executive producer, Abigail Disney. And she then put us in a position to hire an editor, an experienced documentary editor. And he spent another 4 months whipping into shape basically what I had done before. And that was really, really crucial. It's very important to have an outsider come to the footage and look at it in a sort of more detached way than I would. But it's a very long process, you know, and I'm grateful for the fact that it's completed.
You mentioned painstaking, and I'm sure that you fell in love with so many scenes. What were the last two scenes that were cut, and how much? Tell us a little bit about those, and how much did it hurt to actually cut those?
Oh, the last two scenes that didn't make it into the film. I think one of the last two scenes was an additional scene with Mehdi, who's the young kid on Kevin's Club. You know, they formed that bond. I don't know if you remember that scene where they're on the bus and Kevin tells him not to be ashamed of the fact that his girlfriend broke his heart. And, you know, it's one of my favorite scenes, actually. So that mm-hmm. scene is in the film, but there was another one between the two that I had to cut. And another gorgeous scene that didn't make it, that might make it on the extra footage on the DVD, is actually a scene with Zoran, where after that impromptu Christmas dinner that the teammates take Zoran and Kevin to, they're back at the apartment. It's 2 a.m. in the morning. Kevin is already asleep. Zoran is still up on Skype trying to reach his wife in Belgrade. And literally at 2 in the morning, somebody knocks at the door, and it's Abdullah, the Afghani guy, the super of the building. And he walks in, I don't even remember why, like he did almost every day. And he looks at the Christmas tree and he's mesmerized. And, you know, because he helped get the Christmas tree, but now it's all decorated. And So he calls his buddies, and next thing you know, this apartment is full of like six or seven Iranians sitting around. Wow. They can't talk to each other. They're just looking at that tree. They're trying to communicate. And it was like life theater. There was a beautiful, beautiful display of humanity right in front of my eyes. And that still is one of my favorite scenes. But it could only work if you give it time to breathe and unfold. And so it was, that scene in itself was like 7 minutes, and that was just enough, too much. We couldn't fit it in, unfortunately.
Losing the focus of the film, you have to keep that in. Yeah. Okay, I just have one last question for Kevin. I'm struck how much in this conversation, how much political talk you're doing, especially since one of the very first things you said in the movie about, you know, going to play in Iran is that, well, I don't play politics. Do you play politics now? Are you out there stumping for Obama?
No, not really. I still try to stay away from politics, man. I don't like that, you know. But I do, you know, I do have eyes and I do have ears, so I do watch and listen and see what's going on, because, you know, I do have an understanding, you know, being in so many different places, especially these places such as Israel and Iran and Venezuela. You know, Venezuela is a hot topic too. It's not quite like Iran, but they do have Chavez. So I'm around all these places with all these politics, and I can see, you know, everybody's pushing their own agenda, not so much the agenda for the people as a whole, but their own agenda so that they can get in to do what they want to do. So I always try to stay away from that, because I think that the people are the one who really has the power, and they should be the one who dictate where the country should go. And, you know, unfortunately, because of our politics today, our leaders have set themselves up as kings, whereas the smaller man is still struggling, and it should be the opposite way around. So that's one of the reasons why I stay away from it.
Actually, let me give you one more, Kevin. Here's an easy one for you. What's your opinion of this film? You want to put in a plug? Are you proud of this movie? Is it your crowning achievement?
I mean, I have no other movies, so it better be the crowning achievement. but seriously, I just, you know, when you hear the topic or the title, the Iran Job, you probably think most of it is politics. And even though it has some play in government, I don't want everybody to think that this is USA versus Iran. It's nothing like that. I want you to just look into the movie, see the movie, and have an idea that in the country of Iran, they have real people just like you who have real struggles, real problems, who have to wake up every day, have to deal with even worse stuff that we have to deal with. And the fact that we can get up and cry whether or not we have a PlayStation 3 is so insignificant to what other people have to deal with, not only in Iran, but all over the world. And for us to pass judgment on someone else and create all this prejudice in our mind based on a country that we know nothing about. You know, the first thing they tell you when you're trying to solve a problem, you have to analyze the problem and know more about the problem. Well, yet we come to these conclusions without even trying to figure out who these people are really are. So this movie should give you an insight of what the people are going through in Iran and how they want change and how they're not happy with the government, the same government that we are claiming have all these weapons of mass destruction and so forth that we probably want to go to war with. But even though we're going to war with that country, the people itself is at war with that country right now, and they're not being heard of. So hopefully this movie will give you an insight of the people's voice in Iran.
And like you keep saying, and something that an expatriate like myself realizes, is that people are people. I think, to me, that's really one of the main points of the film.
Definitely.
The film is so beautiful on so many different levels, and besides also Till also being a beautiful movie from how it's shot, but obviously it's a film that you want to get out there to the general public. Oz and myself have both had the privilege to have already watched the film. Till, there's the Kickstarter campaign. where you can donate money to try to bring it to a theater near you. Talk about that, and then also maybe first, if you want to, also talk about where the film is showing. I know there's a, I think there's an LA show coming up. Talk about where the show, where people can see the movie, and then also talk about the Kickstarter campaign.
Sure. I mean, we're going to open the film here in Los Angeles next Friday, September 28th, in two theaters, one at the Lemley in Beverly Hills and the other one at the Lemley in Encino.
And, congratulations for that, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And then tomorrow we actually have a word-of-mouth screening at USC here in Los Angeles. And then Sunday we have another campus screening at UC Berkeley in San Francisco. And then it opens officially in Los Angeles September 28th. And then a few weeks later, October 12th in New York City at the IFC Center. But it's very expensive to release a film, you know, publicity, mm-hmm. and print traffic and all of that. And that's why we're simultaneously running a Kickstarter campaign where people can help the release basically by pre-buying the DVD or the T-shirt or the poster, or, you know, they can donate anything from $1 to $10,000. All of that helps, you know, really, even if it's a buck, just the support and it is great to have. And some of these things are, I think, pretty decently priced, like the DVD or free download or the T-shirt. And but there are also rewards that are a little higher. For example, you know, we had one pledger here in the U.S. who pledged $5,000 so that the film could come to her city, in this case, Minneapolis, where we were going to open it for a week-long run. Another pledger pledged $10,000 for the chance to hang out with Kevin for a day. And, and so he'll get a nice workout. you know, so, and then there is, I think, for example, universities, what they like to do sometimes is go for the community screening reward, where for $1,000 you get to host a screening in front of your community, regardless of the audience size. And either myself or Sarah, my wife, the producer, will be available for Q&A. So, you know, anywhere from $1 to $10,000, you can participate and help bring this film to as many people as possible. And I think that's important because it's really a film for sort of a mainstream general audience. It's not a film for film buffs or, you know, sort of the elite film circles. It's a film that I think would benefit people that that don't necessarily engage with Middle Eastern countries or other cultures at large. And thanks to Kevin, who's funny and insightful, and thanks to the incredible people that he meets there, it's an entertaining film where you can actually laugh in spite of the fact that some serious issues are being touched upon. And of course, the basketball doesn't hurt either.
Maybe just give the information out, social information out, as far as how people can back the film. Maybe the easiest way for them. We'll have the link to the Kickstarter campaign, but maybe just
yes. And also can crowdsourcing be done from Europe as well? Would it be possible to get the private screenings in Europe?
Yeah, it can be done from anywhere in the world, in fact, and it's very simple. I think the easiest way is to just go to our website, which is www.theiranjob.com, and there you will see a big link to the Kickstarter. It says something like support the release through Kickstarter on the right of our website, and you click on that, and then you'll get to the Kickstarter link. And there you'll find the trailer and the description of the rewards and what we're trying to do. And there's a big green button that says, back this project. All you need to do is hit that button, have a credit card, and go through a very simple PayPal, you know, Amazon process. And it can be done from anywhere in the world. We did one of those campaigns actually 10 months ago to raise completion funds, and we had backers from all over the world. Literally every corner of the world contributed to the completion of this film, and we're hoping that this current campaign can do something like that. We had a, for example, 2 weeks ago, we had a professor from Bulgaria, an American professor at the American University in Bulgaria. She screened it to her class, the film, and they had a Q&A with me over Skype. 44 students from all over the world. It was really incredible, just the response. And they're all now backers, you know, in their small way. They're all students, of course. They don't have a lot of money, but they're trying to just show their support. Some of them are buying the DVD. Some of them are, you know, getting the T-shirt or whatever. And this type of thing is happening basically all over the place. I mean, we have these campus screenings here in the States, but we also have screenings internationally. Unfortunately, we have only 4 minutes for the next interview.
I was ready. I was just going to close you
up. Yeah, that's the closer.
The Iran Job is the name of the film. The story of an American basketball player in Iran. We've been talking to Till Schauder and the basketball player Kevin Shepherd. Kevin, Till, thank you very much for so much
time.
Yes,
thank you very much.
So much appreciated. We love the film. We're going to push the film, try to get people to back it and to have the opportunity to watch a wonderful film. Again, Till Schauder and Kevin Shepherd, thank you very much for coming on the show and giving us so much time.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Also, for waking up so early.
For something like this, it's definitely worth it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
So that was a very very pleasant conversation. There's a lot of nice comp prizes, if you will. A lot of things you can buy. There's some artwork in there. There's obviously, you know, there's the DVD, there's movie posters, T-shirts. There's a lot that they kind of go through and offer. Oz, let's talk about the film a little bit more, what was talked about in the interview. What was the biggest thing that kind of stood out?
Well, I was excited in general to do this interview, and I was excited to since it's been done. it was just a great interview. What was the most shocking thing? Not even close. That this guy shot the majority of the thing with one camera by himself. I mean, seriously, you know, I've worked on film production, I've had screenplays produced, I've been on the set, I've seen the editing, I've seen the way this works, and wow. Wow. I almost wish this hadn't been revealed in the interview, because it's so seamless. You can't even tell. Beyond like how great this film is for what it says and the situations it presents and the editing and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it's just amazing how much work this one guy did and how well he did it.
I mean, I totally agree on pretty much the exact same thing. I mean, this is actually this project was almost bittersweet for me to actually see it up there, because it's actually an idea that I had about like five or 6 years ago, but I was so happy that the film came out exactly how I would have wanted to do it. This is, you know, take, you know, different protagonists and stuff like that, different people and whatever, but this is the story that I would have wanted to tell anyhow, and it's a story that was told, and it's a beautiful story. Like you said, the filming was fantastic. I mean, I'm not a big film critic, but I mean, you look at the pictures, you're like, wow, this is awesome. How could you? I wonder how they did this. I wonder how many people walking around. and the fact that the thing that hit me was that, you know, he could have been easily deported. He could have been kicked out, taken all of that work that he put in, you know, could have gone down the drain.
I mean, think about it. He would, well, without giving too much away, he was under the same sort of threats that some of the women and some of the other characters in this film are under. You know, it like helped create that atmosphere of just a place where not everything is forbidden, but a lot more is forbidden than you would otherwise expect in, say, Europe.
There's so many different things to talk about. I'd love to talk about them all, and maybe people who have seen the movie and however they may have can write in and tell us their opinions of it. I don't want to give away too much because it's something that you should watch and you should really experience for yourself firsthand, and I mean as firsthand as you know watching the film, but experience it for yourself so in that regard I think Osmer's just gonna have to let it sort of sit as it is.
I would say one more thing, not necessarily about the film, but about the businessy aspect of this film. We touched upon it a bit in the interview, and one of the really newsworthy aspects of this movie was how it was funded. The Iran Job is a success story, is a basically template for success in the use of crowdsourcing as funding. This film received over $100,000 just from private individuals, contributors, whatnot. Like the man said in the interview, people who want to pay $2,000 to see this film, like this. Currently, they're trying to work up pledges for a showing in Brooklyn, New York. So if we have any listeners from New York, please consider in order to check out what they offer and also some products. You need to go to Kickstarter.com, and after that, the best way is just to do a search right up at the top for the Iran Job, and this gives you a couple of options and a few ideas about what they've been doing on this interesting way to fund a movie. It's also very heartening for a cynic like me about movies who too often says that people just want to watch crap. This is proof that not only will people not watch crap, they'll watch thoughtful movies and pay for their existence. It's a very heartening story in that respect.
And I know we talked about after we did the interview, one of the things that we talked about is that we should try to get a screening
Yes, if anyone out there is listening from Serbia, contact Ball in Europe. Let's make this happen in the home country of the brilliant supporting character in this film. I'm sure it would play really well in Belgrade. If anybody is out there, contact Ball in Europe. That would be ballineurope@yahoo.com. Let's see if we can get something together.
Yeah, I'll admit I haven't picked up a copy of it yet. I haven't pledged yet, but it's something that I will be doing in the coming days, coming weeks. If nothing else, just to get a couple of copies of the movie and make some nice Christmas gifts for basketball fans.
Yes, your purchase of a DVD goes toward future showings of this movie.
And how amazing is that? How amazing is it to know that you could, you know, you buying a film or two copies of the film, you know, could eventually lead to a filming in Serbia. Could lead to, you know, whatever, you know, an art institute in Paris, or you know, or in Istanbul. You know, we were talking off the air about how crazy Istanbul is sports wise. You know, maybe something like that. You know, it's, just think, you just go out and buy, just go out and buy a film. You know, go out if you don't want to buy the film, just go out and just, you know, pledge $5. You know, just
for those of you into business and or social networking, voodoo, this is something you should look at. This is 20th century marketing for independent filmmakers. It's cheaply done, and people will give these small amounts, and when it's on the internet, millions of people can see it. This is the way you do it, folks. If you're an aspiring basketball documentary filmmaker, this is your model.
Yep, definitely. Anything else you want to talk about it?
See the movie.
Yeah, exactly. You know, make the pledge and get a copy of it.
We should say at this point, because there's always this question, ballineurope.com, highnews.com are not making any money from plugging this movie right now.
Exactly.
We are not getting any percentage of this or anything. We are telling you to buy this for your own good and for the good of the movie.
Exactly.
We are making no money from this.
Exactly. So the movie, as we said, was The Iran Job. The story of an American basketball player in Iran. It's just a wonderful movie, and just please, as far as seeing the movie in theaters, I think your only chances are if you're in LA and New York right now. But it won't stay with that for long, is what I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that was the main issue we had today to kind of address and look at. There's actually some news or some it's been unconfirmed. It's not totally been confirmed, I guess, but I don't know if you've seen it, that Jonas Kozlauskas has taken over as the Lithuanian national team coach. Did you see that yet?
Good move, yes, good move by them. I'm anxious to see that. However, it seems like a long time until we get national basketball again.
Yeah, but you know, whoever it is, you know, he's gonna have to go around and check out things and see, you know, see the players and you know, and put.
So things. there's the new drinking game for the EuroLeague season. Where's Jonas?
There you go. Yeah.
Watch the game, spot Jonas in the crowd.
Yeah, exactly. So different reports out there right now. I mean, obviously it'll be confirmed or denied over the next probably 24 hours. But it looks like right now it says a 4-year deal, which would obviously
so the next Olympic cycle.
Exactly. So Olympic cycle. So you'll have him at two. You'll have him at EuroBasket next year, and then. If they make it, the World Cup, and then another EuroBasket, and then if it would be, then the Olympics. So Jonas Kozlauskas appears to have been appointed new head coach of the national team. You gotta like it. You gotta like it as a move. You know, I mean, he's a coach who knows his stuff. So, Oz, what do you got working on? What are you working on this week?
Oh, this and that, as we say. I have nothing planned, but of course I'll be watching the EuroLeague qualifier games as much as possible. I must admit I have been taking this period as the calm before the storm. However, we'll be back very often once the season really gets started. Other than that, I'm just on the lookout for the interesting and the weird stories. If you got any, send them to me.
Yeah.
ballineurope@yahoo.com.
And those EuroLeague qualifying games are Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Tonight.
Yeah, and they'll determine the final spot. You got a favorite, if you will, in that bracket?
Nah. I mean, I think whoever comes out is going to suffer roughly the same point as Ilan in Group B. I don't. Yeah, I mean, the 24th team is the 24th team. Good for them that they get in. They'll have a couple of great wins. You know, it's a typical story in EuroLeague. I just don't see that upper strata really being affected at all. I really don't expect the top six or seven teams to be affected by this ripple effect of the Nimberg or the what have you, the Lukoil Academic that makes it to the big league.
I don't know. I'm looking for. I would like to see Ulm make it. Roxo Farm Ulm. They have a real tough test with Unis Kazan to start off. I mean, if nothing else, just so that I can maybe. Ulm is about a 3-hour drive for me here, and it would be nice to be able to see. See them in that Group A with Panathinaikos, Real Madrid, Kimki, Fenerbahce, and Union Olympia.
I don't think our listeners could take much more exposure to German basketball.
No, but it's not just German basketball. It's being able to see the teams like Panathinaikos and Real Madrid. You know, I can't. You know, there's no other way to see them. Yeah. Although Panathinaikos, unfortunately, I won't be going to this one either. But Panathinaikos is actually here in Germany again, or is here in Germany on Saturday. They're playing against Bayern Munich. But you know, like the other stuff, I won't be able to do. I'm as far as what I'm doing this week. I have this fifth division team in German basketball in Regensburg that I support, and we're working on the preview guide for that.
Mm.
40 pages for a fifth division team. Not bad, huh?
I know. When I say the German leagues are organized, they're really organized.
I'm working on that, and also I got some baseball to finish off. I was just at the World Baseball Classic qualifiers here in Regensburg. A little bit of baseball away from the world of basketball.
Okay, let's get to the good stuff. When is the Larry Walker interview coming? Please tell myself and all the other Colorado Rockies fans out there.
It's online already. It's online at highnews.com. If I can figure it out, there may actually be the video interview that we did with him.
Excellent.
If I can't figure it out, you're just going to have to just read the article and enjoy it. He was a very, very, very fun person to talk to, actually. It was pretty amusing. And then I'm also writing a story about this Jimmy Van Ostrand. He's like a double-A minor league guy who got cut in Houston and then went to an independent team, the Sugar Land Skeeters.
Wow.
Which is actually the team where Roger Clemens, sorry for basketball fans who have no idea what we're talking about. Roger Clemens, obviously the infamous pitcher, where he was working out to try to make it back to the team to Major League Baseball. So he was with that team, and then Washington picked him up, and he was playing for their Double A affiliate, and then and he crushed it, man. He hit over 500, 4 home runs, 10 runs, 10 RBI. I mean. But it was just like this small. This Regensburg Park is pretty small. I think it was like 321, 325 down the lines.
Uh-huh.
So we had. Uh-huh. I think the. What did they do? It was.
So the righty guys are coming up left-handed.
The Canadians in three games scored 38 runs.
Nice.
And two of those games were 11-1 mercy rule.
Wow. Baseball at its finest.
Yeah, the baseball wasn't that good, but the offensive show that the Canadians put on was nice.
Home run derby.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was home run derby. I think they hit probably something like 10 home runs in three games. So.
Oh, must've.
Yeah, so it was fun. So I got to finish up on that stuff before basketball starts up.
Okay, get out of here. Finish up on this stuff. I'll go read the highnews.com interview with Larry Walker right now.
Yeah, it's not a Q&A. It's more of a, because I talked to some of the other guys what they think about having Larry around. So, but so Oz, we're going to close it. What do you say?
Yes.
How do people get a hold of you? How do people read your stuff? Tell them.
The website is ballineurope.com. The Twitter feed is BIE_basketball. And the Facebook page is exactly what you think it is, facebook.com/ballineurope.
And I'm at highnews at gmx.de is the email. Facebook, put in High News. You can also put in actually taking the charge on the podcast group. And Twitter, we're also at High News. So for Oz, this is Dave Hine, and we are out of here.
Man, I ain't working no more.